You are listening to Awaken the Goddess. Join me, Trinace, as I interview lightworkers who are bringing their gifts to the world for the upliftment of humanity. Listen to their inspiring stories of courage and dedication to follow their hearts and to manifest their dreams. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Awaken the Goddess. I greet you in love and in the light of the infinite creator. Thank you for joining us this evening. Tonight, our distinguished guest is Leonard Perlmutter, the founder of the American Meditation Institute, a yoga science foundation, and the author of Your Conscience, the key to unlock limitless wisdom and creativity and solve all of life's challenges. To connect with Leonard, please go to americanmeditation.org, and he has an incredible website, lots of information, classes, just a full gamut. If you are looking for any kind of healing information, you definitely will find some assistance on this website. So thank you, Leonard, for joining us this evening.
Oh, it's my honor and pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Now, you just had a book release last month.
Yes, that's correct. Your Conscience.
Yes. Okay. This is wonderful. And so, people, this is fresh. It's hot off the press. You can definitely get some information. So tonight, we're just going to entice you into the mind of Mr. Perlmutter, because he's incredible. We had a wonderful talk a few weeks ago, and I was just so excited about him coming on and being a guest for us. So let's get to it. I absolutely want to know about your foundation. Tell me more about your science foundation.
Well, I began it in 1996 under the instruction of my meditation master, Swami Rama of the Himalayas. And it was quite interesting because I received the instruction through a letter. Now, remember, this is 1996. This is before the internet, before FedEx and all sorts of services, courier services. And so it was a postal letter. So it was probably mailed anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks earlier from India. And the entire letter consisted of three words: start teaching now.
Wow.
And I was just sort of blown away. Having not been raised in an Indian or a yogic tradition, my first reaction was fear. On the other hand, I trusted my teacher, and I knew that he must know something that I am not yet aware of. And so then I changed my perspective to begin thinking about, well, what could I possibly teach? And the only thing that I felt, the only curriculum that I felt empowered to teach, really, was what I practiced. And so I sat down at my brand new computer. This is 1996. This is the first computer I ever got. I taught myself how to use it. And for 2 weeks, I just poured out into the computer what I do every day. That became the basis for my classes and for the American Meditation Institute.
Beautiful. So you totally listened and went right for it.
Yes, I did.
And you were in alignment.
I didn't feel that I had any other option when my master suggested that I start teaching now. I knew that he knew something that I could not see.
Beautiful.
In fact, it reminded me of a conversation. In fact, this was the first conversation that I ever had with him in 1991. When I first met him. And his first question to me was, first question, are you a teacher? And I said, no, I'm an art dealer. Because that's the way I earned a living at the time, and I still earn a living through selling my wife's paintings. And so I said, no, I'm not a teacher. I am an art dealer. And he looked at me and he said, you are a teacher and many people will come to you.
Wow. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That, yeah. You know, on this show, I like to talk about that transformation process. So you say you were in art. Now, obviously, you've been on this path for a long time. So give us a little background, Leonard, into your spiritual awakening, into where you were and how you came about knowing that you were far more than just this flesh and blood.
Well, I think two principles guided me from my earliest memories, and that is, one is philosophy, and the second is practicality. I've always seen life, even at a young age, through philosophical lenses. And I'm also very practical. And I can remember, now I was born into a Jewish family, and I knew nothing about Christianity, but once a year on television, you know, little black and white television at the time, there was maybe one or two channels, at a certain time of year, and I didn't even know that it was Christmas time, but it turned out later I realized it was Christmas time, and there were these little black and white movies about Jesus and the good deeds that he did. And I didn't know anything about the religion, but I thought to myself, even back then, this is a good man. This is a good human being. Yeah. I would like to grow up to be something like that. Anyway, in grade school, I joined the Scouts. And so I joined the Cub Scouts, I joined the Boy Scouts, because they taught practical skills. And one time I had a opportunity to speak to my scout master, and I said to him, the motto for scouting is be prepared. What should I be prepared for? And he looked at me with a quizzical look in his eye, and he said, well, how would I know? That's why you need these skills.
What a thing to answer.
Yes. It made sense to me at the time. And so that's what I've been doing. I've been trying to study and practice ideas that brought me a skill set that would help me in every relationship. And one relationship that I had at a very early age was with my automobile mechanic. And Kenny, that was his name, Kenny, knew nothing about yoga or philosophy, but he said something very profound to me, and I could hear his message. Mm-hmm. And what he said was, if you have the right tool, any job is easy.
That's true. That's true. It makes it a lot easier. Yes. Well, tell me, how do you transition from Judaism into yoga science? How was that transition for you?
Pretty easy, because yoga science is not a religion. It's simply an educational body of knowledge.
Yeah.
So if you're born of the Jewish tradition or the Christian tradition or the Muslim tradition or the Buddhist tradition, and you practice yoga science, which is nothing other than optimizing our minds to make better choices, then whatever religion that you follow, you will be a better Jew, you will be a better Christian, you will be a better Buddhist, you would be a better Muslim.
Good, absolutely. And that's what
I consider myself every religion.
Beautiful. I think it's principles and all. And that we need to get past the dogma anyway, you know, because this is a big problem that separates humans on this planet. So we need to.
Not that religions are malicious And not that they don't do some wonderful things in the world, but they don't do everything for everyone.
Right.
So if you have a calling and you have a need, then a teacher will appear.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I love it. Now, we talked about a few things that I thought were very interesting in our pre-interview, Leonard, and I want to ask you some questions so that we can, so you can just expand and expound on these ideas. Now, in your book, Your Conscious, please just give us a little bit of background as to what that book is all about.
Well, I wrote the book beginning in February of 2020 because I was in quarantine. I was not receiving students. And so I constantly asked myself, how may I be of service if I don't have students coming? And like most people, I watched the nightly news. I read magazines and newspapers. Saw news items about the pain that people were going through through the internet, and all because of this COVID, and also the political ramifications of a system that was pretty close to being bankrupt.
Right.
And so I thought to myself, well, how can I serve? How can I serve? And the answer that I came up with is I need to give a gift to people that will help them, to help them deal with the pain that they are dealing with. And so I thought the best gift that I could give them was an understanding of how the conscience works and how the four functions of the mind need to be coordinated to make the best kinds of choices that will enable each human being to fulfill their unique purpose in life.
Definitely. Now, I definitely want to go into those four functions. So if you don't have a pencil and paper, then I suggest that you go get one because Leonard is getting ready to share some wisdom with us, and you are going to want to take notes. So the four functions. You told me there were the conscious, the unconscious, the ego, and the senses. All right.
Correct.
I love it. I love it. So let's go deeper into that. So the four functions, you called it the four functions of the mind. I like the way that you termed that. It's a function of the mind. So that means the mind is larger than the conscious?
Oh, yes. It's much larger than the conscious, and it's larger than the unconscious. And so the challenge that we have is that nobody has taught us about the four functions of the mind, not in any level of schooling that I know of, and they've never trained us to optimize those functions. And so we simply repeat what our parents and our grandparents learned through memorization and recitation. Well, that's not good enough because the highest teaching is through personal experience. And so I learned to constantly wear a hat that has written on the front, Doubting Thomas.
Yeah.
And I began to become a yoga scientist. And I have turned my entire mind, body, sense complex into a laboratory.
Wow.
To coordinate the four functions of the mind. So the first function that we're pretty familiar with, but really not completely, is the ego. Now, in Western psychology and everyday cultural life, ego is associated with someone who is very vain, full of themselves, thinks that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread, but that's far from what the ego truly is. And it's critically important to understand that the ego really seems to be hardwired to the reptilian brain.
Right.
And what does that mean on a practical level to us? Well, the reptilian brain, and therefore the ego, is they're both heavily invested in self-preservation.
Right.
You know, I don't want to die. I don't want to lose the form. It's me.
Right.
If the form dies, then I die. Mm-hmm. And because of that attachment to the form, simply based on the limitation of my brain and my senses,
right.
Because of that attachment, the ego has a tremendous fear of annihilation.
Right.
And that fear of annihilation motivates the ego to interject itself in every relationship. And in every relationship, the ego shows up and cuts that relationship in half. Mm-hmm. One half, the ego will say, oh, this is very pleasant. I like it. I consider this good. Let's reprise it. On the other hand, over here, this is very unpleasant. I consider this bad. I don't like it. I want this eliminated. But for you and I, we already have some experience in life. And we know that things that appear as pleasant are not always good for us.
Right.
And things that are unpleasant aren't always bad for us. So if I continue to give deference to the limited perspective of the ego, I say limited perspective because sometimes the ego is correct. Right now, both of us need a healthy ego to have this conversation.
Right.
Or when we drive an automobile, we need a healthy ego.
Right.
So we don't want to get rid of the ego. We want the ego to grow and expand its awareness. So the ego, you see, only has a limited perspective. So if I exclusively listen to the ego about what's to be done and what's not to be done, I wind up in a tremendous amount of pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way that life should be. And
right.
It's not the way life needs to be. So that's the ego. The ego is often wrong, but it's never in doubt.
Hmm.
But it's loud, and it's pushy, and it's insistent.
Mm-hmm. So the ego
now,
is like the inner child.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so that's the ego. Second is the senses. Now, the senses are the repository for all of our creative energy. In other words, our mind projects our creative energy through our eyes and our nostrils and our mouth and our ears, our hands, our feet, extruding our creative energy to look and smell and taste and hear and touch and to try to find a relationship, an object that is going to make me happy, that is going to make me secure, that is going to make me healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem with the senses is they have very limited vision. They're sort of nearsighted. They can see the appearance of the front of the object when it's pleasant, but they never see the back, which is filled with pain. Because of that, the senses waste a tremendous amount of our creative energy chasing after pots of gold at the end of rainbows that are never really there. So, again, the senses only have limited perspectives. They're often wrong and never in doubt. And an analogy that I like to use as a teaching tool is a tube of toothpaste. If you have a tube of toothpaste and you squeeze it, out comes the toothpaste. But it's virtually impossible to put the toothpaste back into the tube. It's the same with our creative energy. Once the mind becomes addicted to sense gratification, which it is today,
mm-hmm.
for most humanity,
right.
then it's impossible to withdraw that creative energy and apply it to something else, like our duties and responsibilities of living every day.
Okay.
So that's the senses. The third function of the mind is the unconscious. This is the reservoir of all of our merits and demerits. Everything that you and I deem essential to self-preservation is on that hard drive, so to speak. It's in the unconscious mind. You know, our memories, even the pleasant ones and the unpleasant ones, or our imagination of what if this should happen? What if that should happen? What if neither happens? And so the ego, senses, and the unconscious mind are really advisors. They are advisors and counselors for the mind, but they cannot make a decision. They cannot make a choice. Mm-hmm. They are just advisors. They are like salespeople. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to the fourth function of the mind, which is the conscience. The conscience is the only function of the mind that can discriminate, determine, judge, and decide.
Hmm.
I heard that, I learned that, and I began experimenting with it. It was a game changer for me, because what it said to me was, every single choice I have ever made has been, and every single choice that I will make will be made by the conscience, because the ego, senses, and unconscious mind can only advise.
Right.
And so the conscience can act in one of two ways, depending on how noisy the other three functions of the mind are. And generally, because we have not trained them, they're pretty darn noisy.
Right.
Pretty darn insistent. And when that occurs, when the ego, senses, and unconscious mind are undisciplined and they do not support the conscience, then the conscience has no other choice but to rubber stamp the loudest voice it can hear.
Wow.
Which means what? The limited perspectives of the ego, senses, and unconscious mind.
Hmm.
It's not very different than having an automobile that you're driving that only turns in one direction. Can you imagine driving a car that only turns to the left, can't turn to the right?
Hmm.
Turns to the right, but can't turn to the left. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that would be useless, and I would be in a lot of accidents that way. But if we can learn to parent the ego, senses, and unconscious mind, train them to listen to the conscience for the sake of an experiment, then when the mind is quiet, the conscience can act as a mirror. That's its functionality. It can act as a mirror, and that mirror can reflect super conscious wisdom from the super conscious portion of the mind. I never heard of the super conscious portion of the mind growing up or going to school, but yes, it does exist. It is one of the forms of the mind.
Yeah.
It's beyond the conscious portion of the mind. It's beyond the unconscious portion of the mind. This superconscious portion of the mind is the same portion of the mind where Albert Einstein saw mathematical equations and where Paul McCartney hears beautiful melodies. Doesn't mean that we're going to be songwriters. It doesn't mean that we are going to become physicists. What it does mean is, if you and I can train our minds, parent our minds through the experiment process of yoga science, then we too will be able to access this super conscious wisdom into our conscious mind.
Right.
And we will know the thought to think, the word to speak, and the action to take that will lead us for our highest and greatest good.
So how do we access that superconscious?
Well, I could share with you what I do
Please.
to access it.
Yeah, but it's through
So,
meditation, correct? Is that?
yes,
Yes.
that's a big key. That's a big key
Yeah.
because in meditation, we gain four skills that can be used in every relationship to enhance our creative capacity to access superconscious wisdom. So in meditation, we learn the skill of one pointed attention, bringing all of our attention to one point, to the exclusion of all other distractions. That's the point of genius and creativity. After we gain that one pointed attention, automatically, we create a space between stimulus and response. And what lies between the stimulus and the response in this space is our freedom to choose, our freedom to choose. We all think that we're very free, but really we're enslaved to the ego senses and unconscious mind's faulty concepts. But with one pointed attention, automatically, there's a space between stimulus and response. And in that space between stimulus and response, I can redirect my conscious attention to the conscience. And the conscience can then reflect super conscious wisdom. And if I can follow that, if I can convince the ego senses and unconscious mind to experiment with that superconscious wisdom, I'm also increasing the muscles of willpower to do what's to be done when it's to be done and not do what's not to be done when it's not to be done.
Right. Wonderful. So strengthening every part of you through meditation and opening up that field of communication with the higher self through the superconscious.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And so basically what's happening is my entire mind, body, sense complex then becomes an instrument, an instrument of the superconscious wisdom, which has just been reflected into my conscious mind through the conscience.
Yes. Yes. Now tell me, is there another way to access the superconscious without meditating?
Well, this is a little methodology that I've developed, and it works because I don't want to get rid of the ego. The ego can be a very good friend. I don't want to get rid of the senses. I have a body. I have senses. Life is to be enjoyed. I enjoy sense gratification just like every human being. And I don't want to get rid of the unconscious mind. It has a lot of positive things stored on that hard drive.
Right.
So when I have a decision to make, I call a meeting. I make an appointment with the ego senses and unconscious mind and the conscience. And I invite them to join me seated around our kitchen table. And I play the role of the moderator because I am the parent of my mind. So as the parent, I call people into a meeting and I say to them, look, here's the situation. We just had dinner. Are we going to brush our teeth or are we not going to brush our teeth? I'd like to call on each of you for your individual perspectives. Ego, you go first, please. Tell us, what is your advice? And the ego might say, that sounds terribly unpleasant. I vote no. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. And you sit quietly, and I'm going to call on the senses next. Senses, what is your opinion? What do you advise? And the senses might say, well, I'm not crazy about brushing my teeth, but I admit that I loved the dinner that we had, but the dessert was fabulous. We had apple pie tonight, and that's my favorite. So I vote no for brushing the teeth, but I vote yes for a second slice of apple pie. Okay, thank you, senses. Thank you very much. Now please sit down. I'm going to call on the unconscious. And what is your perspective? What would you like to share in this decision-making process? And the unconscious mind might say something like, "Oh, I'm with the other two. I'm with the ego and the senses. Very often we vote as a block. That's my habit." Okay, well, thank you. Please sit down. Now, I want everybody to be quiet because I'm going to call on the conscience. And I want the conscience to share in this quietude the super conscious wisdom that it can reflect all the way to the center of consciousness from the super conscious portion of the mind. Conscience, would you please share your perspective and your advice? And the conscience steps forward and says, "Thank you." And I'm sure you all know the conscience says, "This life that we are all living together is not really a sprint. It's more like a marathon. And for a marathon, we need healthy, strong teeth. We need healthy, strong gums. We need a healthy, strong immune system. And if we can just take a 2-minute time out, go into the bathroom, brush the teeth, that will serve us very well insofar as providing us strong teeth, strong gums, and a strong, healthy immune system." So, listening to everybody and the superconscious wisdom that has just been reflected by the conscience, as the parent, I do a little sales talk. "Okay, ego, senses, and unconscious mind, this would be a perfect opportunity for all of us to do a scientific experiment. It's not really asking much. 2-minute timeout. We'll brush our teeth, we'll come back to the kitchen table, and we'll all share our experience with brushing the teeth. Now, remember, it's an experiment, so you don't have to adopt this forever. So let's go in. And because it's such an easy experiment, we all go in, brush the teeth, come back, and then as the parent, I again go to the ego. Okay, how was that for you? Share what you've just experienced. And the ego said, "Well, I was very surprised because, generally speaking, I define any kind of change from what I like as some form of death. But we brushed the teeth and I didn't die. I'm still here. So I'm very happy. Wasn't so bad." Okay, thank you, ego. And the senses, what was your experience? "Well, I too was very surprised. I wasn't really in favor of it. But after we brushed the teeth and the tongue was gliding over my front teeth, it felt so clean, and there was none of that mossy feeling on my teeth that I really don't like at all. So my experience was pretty good. It was pretty pleasant." Thank you. Thank you, senses. Please sit down, and I'll call on the unconscious. And would you share what you experienced? And what does the unconscious mind say? "Well, wasn't so bad. Wasn't so bad." So through that relatively easy experiment, I have given a gift to the ego, senses, and unconscious mind of a pleasant experience. And right now, they trust me as their parent more than they did before that experience. They also trust the super conscious wisdom reflected by the conscience more than they did before the experiment. And that provides me as the parent a beachhead to build on with another easy experiment and another easy experiment.
Right.
And with each easy experiment and a pleasant experience, the limited perspective of the ego, senses, and unconscious mind increases, 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 increases.
So when I listen to that story, or the metaphor, what I get from that is that you are going within the self and basically asking yourself a question, whether it's, am I going to change jobs? Am I going to move? Am I going to save this money? Do I want to take this trip? Whatever it is that is your concern, you can take it within the self and then ask each part of you, what do you think of it? Because you're giving it a voice. And when we don't give ourselves a voice in every aspect that we are, then we get some kind of pushback, or we really don't realize how complicated we are within that mind complex. And like you say, the ego is very powerful, very strong. And maybe that's where a lot of people's fears come from, because they really haven't presented that part of themselves with the question to acknowledge themselves on that level. What do you think we should do about this?
Well, it's so interesting, because we get very angry, don't we, when other people don't respect us, don't respect our voice.
Yeah.
And yet we are doing the same thing with our own ego, senses, and unconscious mind.
Wow.
We don't love them enough. We don't give them the kind of love, the kind of tough love that they really need. And we are the only ones who can do it. I can't do it for you, and you can't do it for me.
Right.
But we each can do it for ourselves. And that process of learning to love and give love to the ego and the senses and the unconscious mind helps them to grow up to a greater reality that exists, rather than a myopic reality where fear predominates, anger predominates, greed predominates, you see.
So we basically just need to know more about who we are and what we're made up of. Because like you said, so many people don't know and aren't aware that there's many parts of themselves that is present. It's the way we perceive ourselves. So I do appreciate you sharing this with us, because I think it's a beautiful perspective to break down who we are inside. And we can have many different names for those functions or parts of ourselves, because when you go through different traditions, they have different names for them. But just the beauty of the way that you're explaining it is very simplistic, and anybody can understand it. And aside from the meditation, if people are having difficulty meditating, which again, it's a practice, you have to practice it every day. You have to take time to do it, and it gets easier over time. But until you get really good at that, then you can also put this into practice. What Leonard is talking about here is speak to yourself and really take the time to listen. And that's why I tell people to go for walks. They need to go for walks alone, not with other people. Take the headphones off. Take the music off. You need to be in silence. You need to be in quiet. And you kept repeating that. In our silence, in our quiet, we go within and we ask these different parts of ourselves. So we have to have that quiet time. And it is, some people have a difficult time quieting their mind. So this way you're speaking to different parts of yourself. And I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. I want everybody to be writing your questions down, because we're going to continue with some more questions, but I know that there's some things that you will want to ask Leonard, and I want to give the last 10 minutes of our time here for your questions. So please write some questions down, and he'll be happy to answer them. So Leonard, let's move forward. So we were talking about the ego being out of control. Now, in some traditions, the ego is considered part of the shadow energy, and it is self-destructive. And you say it's self-destructive because we haven't trained it. We haven't made it grow up and take responsibility and be more open-minded. So what are some exercises, aside from the one you just shared with us, that can help people to work with their ego self, with that insecure part of them, that childlike mind, the one that doesn't want to read the book, the one that doesn't want to study, the one that wants to play instead of, you know, take time to do things that really need to be done? What are some things that you would suggest that we can do to assist our ego to grow up?
Well, those experiments are available all the time. The critical prerequisite is that in every experiment, and that's including meditation, we must not take on too much too soon. Mm-hmm. If we never lifted weights to build muscles, and we find ourselves in the afternoon of life, and we believe that it would serve us well if we had greater strength, greater muscular strength, but we never had any experience with that, the last thing we will want to do is go to the gym and start picking up 100 or 200 pounds. Without any experience, it would hurt us. But if we had the desire for it, we would begin lifting a small amount of weight. Do that for a week or two, then add a little more weight. And then after a couple more weeks, add a little more weight. And within a short period of time, you'll be lifting substantial weight and growing muscles, and you won't injure yourself. So we have to provide the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind, all of them, with easy no-brainers. That's why I tell people when they're meditating, start with 60 seconds. Don't start with 15 minutes or a half hour or an hour to meditate. Because the ego would want you to do that, because that would be a prescription for failure.
Right.
But if you started with 60 seconds, we could all do it for 60 seconds. And in meditation, we have to recognize that it's the habit of the mind to want to change the channel. That's
right.
Why we have thousands and thousands of channels on our television and our internet today. Mm-hmm. So we have to recognize the nature and the habit of the mind is to be distracted, and that's okay. So when you're focused on either a mantra or the breath for meditation for just 60 seconds and a thought comes, you're not angry. You don't think that you're a failure. No, you simply honor and witness the distraction. You let it go. It's all part of the meditation process, the appearance of the distraction and the letting go of the distraction. It's all part of training the mind.
Hmm.
And then bring the mind back to the object of attention, either the mantra or the breath. And just do that for 60 seconds. And if that works for you after a couple of weeks or a month, and you have the time and you have the interest, add another 60 seconds. Then you're meditating for 2 minutes and you're doing it every morning and perhaps every evening before you go to sleep so that you'll have a nice uninterrupted sleep at night. Don't take on too much too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And these examples abound. If it's 10 o'clock at night and you're trying to relax, you're watching TV, and a coffee commercial comes on the television, what happens? Oh, the ego senses an unconscious mind in there thinking about making a dash to the kitchen to get a cup of coffee that they love. Maybe some half and half, maybe some sweet sugar, maybe a second slice of apple pie from dinner, you see. But at 10 o'clock at night, the conscience, reflecting super conscious wisdom, might say, 10 o'clock at night, is it not a good idea to drink coffee with caffeine in it? will be up all night. We have a very important meeting first thing in the morning at the office. Let's sacrifice this desire at 10 o'clock at night. And if you want to have the same conversation at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, perhaps the superconscious wisdom will give you the good housekeeping seal of approval.
Yes. So truly not being led by your desires and instincts, but thinking, being very conscious of the choices you're making. Are they good for you? Yes.
And recognize that right now, with all of us, myself included, the mind is addicted to things it likes and things it doesn't like. Mm. And as I mentioned earlier, that which is pleasant isn't always good for us. That which is unpleasant isn't always bad for us. That's why today, instead of just eating food that I love, I eat food that loves me, that loves my eyes, that loves my brain, that loves my joints, that loves my muscles, that loves my pancreas, that loves my stomach, et cetera, et cetera. And if you eat food that loves you, gosh, you fall in love with that food.
Right. You feel great afterward.
You feel terrific.
Okay, that's wonderful, because that leads right into our next question. Now, when we spoke before, you talked about the body mirroring the state of the conscience. Could you please expound on that?
When my outer actions are in conflict with the inner superconscious wisdom of the conscience, when my thoughts, words, and deeds are in conflict with the superconscious wisdom reflected by the conscience, that conflict in the mind is echoed in the consciousness of every cell. Hmm. So instead of, for example, having a liver that is relaxed, like my hand is relaxed right now, the consciousness of the liver will take on the same conflicted form as my mind. And this is the form that the liver will take. And a contracted liver is not going to be able to serve the entire organism as effectively and efficiently as a relaxed liver.
Right. And eventually you're going to have dis-ease develop.
Dis-ease and eventually disease.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't need to lessen a pain at a low decibel level. So pain can be a wonderful, wonderfully instructive teacher. It teaches us that it's time to make a mid-course correction.
Yes.
I often think of Neil Armstrong, the great astronaut who was the first human being on the moon. Can you imagine? He's in this small little lunar module hurtling down to the surface of the moon. And he wants a safe, soft landing, doesn't he? Because he wants to come back to Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. And as the lunar module is coming down, down, down at a great rate of speed, onboard computers in that little lunar module are reading all sorts of telemetry, all sorts of information that's coming in, and radioing them back to Houston at the command center. And those big supercomputers at Houston were figuring out how Armstrong should fire retro rockets in a certain sequence for a certain period of time so that the lunar module will make a soft, pleasant landing. And that's what we're doing when we love and train and parent our ego, senses, and unconscious mind, and have them support our conscience as our guide.
Very good. Very good. Now, we also spoke about the power center. Explain more about what you feel is the power center.
Well, I believe that the power center is the mind, because I can't raise my hand without first entertaining a thought. I can't take an action without first entertaining a thought. So thoughts are our most powerful resource. We think of thoughts like dirty pennies, not any value. Not so. Not so. Thoughts are very, very, very powerful. Not quite as powerful as emotions.
Yeah.
And that's because emotions at their origin are all motivated by love. Motivated by love. And that love force is the most powerful and creative force in the universe. But when I and my mind believe that I am an individual, and that I am my body, and that I am my mind, then that powerful emotion changes into a desire for an object that will bring me happiness or security or health. And if that desire then is blocked, then that love force again changes into anger. And yet, if that desire for the object is fulfilled, then that love force changes yet again into fear that I might lose what I have. So that power of both thoughts and the love power of emotion are critically, critically powerful, and they must be understood, and they must be balanced to work in service to the super conscious wisdom reflected by the conscience. That's where the music begins.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know why the mic went out. It's Mercury retrograde, and anything can happen.
That's true.
I would like for everyone to put in their questions now into the dashboard where you see questions. And I'm going to continue to ask Mr. Perlmutter my questions, but we also would like to hear from the audience. So please enter your questions now. All right. So that is exactly the point where I want to go with these thoughts, because people do not understand how powerful their thoughts are and that they are creating from their thoughts. Like you said, you cannot move your hand unless you think the thought first. So the power of the thought is such that we should be very conscious of what we are thinking about. And so because thought can be entrained, because we do things through repetition, then we need to entrain ourselves almost through affirmation or some other form, in order to reinforce positive thinking. So tell me what your idea is about positive thinking, because so many people badmouth positive thinking. And I don't understand why, because it's extremely important, but I want to hear your perspective about positive thinking.
Well, you know, we all hear quite a bit about junk food, and we know that we should probably avoid junk food. But worse than junk food is junk thoughts.
Yes.
Junk thoughts. And when we give our conscious attention to these junk thoughts, we become what we think.
Yes.
Right? We become what we give our attention to. And so it's critically important that we recognize that every single thought that comes into our awareness is only a suggestion. It is not an imperial command. And so there are two kinds of thoughts. There are those thoughts that the conscience and the superconscious wisdom believes that we should serve through speech and action. And there are those thoughts that the superconscious wisdom is advising us to sacrifice it so that the inherent contractive and debilitating, often poisonous energy of those thoughts can be transformed into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and creativity. And in every relationship, we have to monitor our thoughts, serve only those thoughts that the superconscious wisdom advises, and sacrifice the others, send them to the refinery to be transformed into strategic reserves of energy, willpower, and creativity that you can use 24/7 in any kind of relationship. So I say that if you have a lot of anger in your mind, if you have a lot of fear, if you have a sense of lack and a lot of greed, I think you're very, very, very wealthy. Why? Because it's like having a gold mine in your backyard, or an oil well, discovering an oil well in your backyard. But just having an oil well in your backyard is not going to do you any good. It won't help you drive your automobile if you have a combustion engine. So you have to get that oil out of the ground and send it to a refinery to refine it into gasoline. Then you can power your automobile. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with fear and anger and selfish desires. In and of themselves, they're not bad. But in the present moment, they're contractive and they're debilitating and they are poisonous. But what did we learn in the fifth grade about energy? Can't be created, can't be destroyed, but it can be transformed. We know that we can transform ice into water and water into steam. And I'm here to tell you that you in your life, if you listen to your conscience, you can transform the poisonous and debilitating contractive energy of fear, anger, and selfish desire into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and an expansion of your creative capacity.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, because that is what our talk was about tonight, is limitless wisdom, creativity, and how to awaken the power of your conscious. So through having your conscious tap into the superconscious, then you are able to manifest these things in your life. So what last words would you have for people? I'm not getting any questions from the audience, so you must be answering all those questions they have. But what last words would you have for people to keep in mind that's extremely important for them to manifest this limitless wisdom and creativity in their life?
My advice to everybody listening is, don't believe a word I've said. Don't believe a word I've said. But if what you heard sounded interesting and you're motivated, I would support you 100% if you decided to experiment yourself, because only through your own experiments will you come to know and know that you know the truth. And that's the truth that will set you free in every relationship and transform stress into strength and creativity.
Beautiful. Start living it. Start living. Yeah. Yes. Start living and test.
Don't be dependent on me.
Yes.
Don't be dependent on anyone else. To thine own self be true.
Beautiful. Last words. Absolutely beautiful. Well, thank you, Leonard, for joining us this evening. I love having you here. Yes. Yes.
Such a pleasure being together.
Yes, it was very much a treat to have you on. And everyone, please remember you can connect with Leonard. Go to AmericanMeditation.org. I will have this video posted on the website as well. And you can view it again if you missed some of those important points and you wanted to take notes. But this has been a wonderful night. Thank you so much, Leonard, for spending time with us and sharing those wonderful thoughts. We'd love to have you back again to share more, because I'm sure there's more that we can talk about. I had several other questions, but we are running out of time. So I would love to have you back again if you would come. Thank you.
Well, you're twisting my arm, and I'm easy. It would be an honor to be back with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for attending this evening. We appreciate you being a part of this. I leave you in the love and in the light of the Infinite Creator. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Awaken the Goddess. For more information on our guest today, please visit us at awakenthehealing.com or follow us on Instagram at awakenthehealing, on Twitter at awakenforlife, and on Facebook at awakenthehealing. Please subscribe to our podcast to receive alerts of new episodes. We look forward to sharing more stories of transformation with you in our next episode of Awaken the Goddess.